yourself this phase, just trying to holler at y'all and see what's going on. Had a lot on my mind, reminiscing, trying to figure out these things that are going on my mind. Trying to figure out some puzzles. I'm not here to start nothing. I ain't trying to start nothing. Just got some things that I want to get done. Some things that I want to get solved. Some things I want to enlighten myself with. So maybe y'all take a time and to get the opportunity to stop by and listen to my thoughts. Hope so. Very intellectual. So if you get time, just holler at me. I'm reminiscing all in my room, just trying to figure out a whole lot of things. Until then, y'all have a great day, and thank you for coming in and listening to me. Thanks.
Tell me why they envy me. Lord, I pray you defend me from my enemy. Defend me from my enemy. Defend me from my enemy, yeah. Defend me from my enemy. Defend me, na-na-na. Till I'm like God's side, God, tell me, baby.
This is a call to action. Georgia, the entire state, especially down in Hawaii, Georgia, you guys are up. Towns County, you guys are up. This was 29-year-old Trevante Jamal Schubert Helton. He was found around 2 o'clock in the High Shoals Falls area in the Shallow Creek Wildlife Management Area located near Indian Grave Gap Road near Hawaii, hanging from a tree. They said they found him in this area hanging from a tree. Now, we're not dealing with none of that. He did it to himself. No. Now, this is his alleged girlfriend. You know, she's talking about how she missed him, you know, and she made a comment on one of those about something he couldn't take it or something like that, whatever it was, you know what I'm saying, allegedly. But we got questions because that area is not this friendly. It's not friendly to these people right here, and it's barely any of us down there.
We have some horrifying breaking news this morning. A U.S. airman by the name of Aaron Bushnell self-immolated in front of the Israeli embassy as an act of protest. He streamed this live. He said, in part, he did not want to be complicit in genocide. And as he was on fire, he was screaming, "Free Palestine." His family wanted the video to be released. Obviously, Aaron, as this, you know, as part of what he was doing, wanted people to see what he had to say. We're going to show you a little bit of the video so you can hear his words. We're going to cut it off before he begins to douse himself and set himself alight. But just a warning, even this portion is very disturbing. So only watch if you want to see this. Let's take a look.
Is Aaron Bushnell. I am an active duty member of the United States Air Force, and I will no longer be complicit in genocide. I'm about to engage in an extreme act of protest, but compared to what people have been experiencing in Palestine at the hands of their colonizers, it's not extreme at all. This is what our ruling class has decided will be normal.
So he then goes ahead and sets himself on fire. Paramedics rush in, as well as, I don't know if it's cop or some sort of law enforcement or Israeli embassy security, who is pointing a gun at him as
it's
he is
service.
Potentially yeah. burning to death. There are conflicting reports this morning. Some outlets say that he has died from those injuries. Others say that he is in critical condition, in very, very bad shape. A few things that we have learned. First of all, it has been confirmed he is, in fact, a current active U.S. airman. We also know, and this is crazy to me that we had no idea about this, this is actually the second act of self-immolation in this country. There was another individual who set themselves on fire for very similar reasons outside of the Israeli embassy in Atlanta, I believe. So I'm not sure how that got covered up, and we didn't hear about any of this. We can put some of the details here up on the screen. Again, disturbing image of Aaron here on fire. The breaking news headline here from Mario Nofal is an active duty member of the U.S. Air Force set himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy in Washington. Quote, I will no longer be complicit in genocide. While on fire, he repeatedly yells, free Palestine. I don't even know what to say about this. The media, of course, fell down completely on the job here in reporting exactly what happened. We can put this up on the screen. New York Times and other major outlets, first of all, it took them a long time to cover it at all. Second of all, in their headlines, they don't explain the reason why Aaron gave for committing what he described as an extreme act of protest and likely, you know, ending in at least critical injuries and very possibly in his death. We can see these headlines here. New York Times, a man set himself on fire outside the Israeli embassy in Washington, the police said. U.S. airman sets himself on fire outside Israeli embassy. Active duty airman sets himself on fire. U.S. airman sets himself on fire. Again, nothing about his stated reasons for why he did this, Sagar. It's just... it's horrifying to watch. It's just horrifying.
Yes, it's horrible. I really recommend people do not watch that video, the full video of it, unless you really, like, you need to know exactly what you're getting yourself into. And it's just one of those where headspace and all of that. As you said, this fits with the second one, which, again, I did not know about the Atlanta, the U.S. Air Force confirming that the active duty U.S. Airman was involved in the incident. We're not yet sure as to his condition in the hospital. There have been sustained protests outside of the Israeli embassy here in Washington, as well as many other Israeli consulates and other diplomatic outposts around the world. But it's just horrifying. The entire situation is just devastating, especially to think he seems to be a very young man. As you said, apparently his family wanted the video and all that released, but it certainly, I mean, this is reminiscent of very likely why the act of protest was taken. The monk who set himself on fire in protest of the Vietnam War, which became one of the most iconic, you know, images of that time. So very likely trying to recreate something like that. But I don't want to glorify or, you know, anything like this, just because, you know, this man very likely is going to lose his life as a result of this.
Yeah, incident. If he hasn't yeah. already, or, you know, the fruit seller in Tunisia.
Yeah, that's right.
Another, extreme act taken there, a desperate act taken, which had massive geopolitical consequences. And as you said, Sagar, I'm sure that's what Aaron, who was clearly desperately trying to do something to stop what he sees and what I see and what much of the world sees as a genocide, and as an active duty service member feeling that he was being made to be complicit in that genocide. Our thoughts are certainly with his family. I hope that he and his family are able to find peace and comfort in a horrifying time, horrific situation. Hey.
You know, it's hard to be black in a world controlled by white folks. Du Bois said we always have the double consciousness. We trying to be black, and meanwhile you got a white ghost hovering over your head that says, if you don't do this, you'll get killed. If you don't do this, you won't get no money. If you don't do this, nobody will think you beautiful. If you don't do this, nobody will think you smart. That's the ghost. You're trying to be black, and the ghost is telling you to be a ghost. We hope you won't submit. In Newark, when we meet each other on the street, we say, what time is it? We always say, it's nation time. And we say, what's going to happen? We say, land is going to change hands.
So first and foremost, I want to give all praises to the Most High Yahweh, and we do so in the name of Mashiach Yahushua, and I pray that this lesson is further edifying to whoever it comes across. So, it's a lot of things I don't like about Western culture and Westernized individuals.
So let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears? You, America!
And one of these things is their perception of marriage. To start, most people in the West think marriage is a monogamous relationship that is formally recognized by the law of man, and they solidify this union by trading rings at the altar after an optional exchange of vows. However, when Adam and Eve were created, there were no priests, courthouses, or rings in existence, which means they never went to have their marriage recognized under the law of man. Furthermore, the first commandment these two were given was to be fruitful and multiply, which means they were told to have intercourse and reproduce without a ring on their fingers. This is important because if you believe marriage involves a ring, priest, and a courthouse, you will have to consider Adam and Eve two people who had intercourse outside of marriage due to them not having these things. And this will make them sinners for following instructions given from the Father, Yahweh, which makes no sense at all due to the Father not leading any man to sin, as we are told in James 1:13. With this being said, If the father didn't consider Adam and Eve sinners for having intercourse, they must have been married in his eyes. But at what point was the marriage made official? And how was this done without the traditional ceremony found in the world today? These questions can only be answered by gaining an understanding on what marriage is in the eyes of our father. Which is why today's video will establish what marriage is and what it isn't using scriptures and history. And Lord willing, whoever has ears to hear is further edified. So before we address what marriage is biblically, let's expose a few facts about modern day marriage. To start, the ring, priest, and courthouse are all customs of men. For example, the wedding ring can be traced back to pagan Egyptian customs, in which they used rings made from leather and hemp to symbolize love's infinity and eternity. To some, this might sound romantic, but this changes when we learn this custom mimicked another pagan tradition in which Egyptians used gold rings to portray serpents swallowing their own tails to represent the eternal cycle of things. This type of ring was called an Ouroboros, which is also a false deity that is used to mock the heathen's understanding of the father, Yahweh. This makes it clear that wedding rings have a more sinister meaning behind them, and instead of them being something that established marriage, a wedding ring is a symbol used to pay homage to a pagan deity. Furthermore, due to this deity being a serpent, we know it's another representation of the spiritual demon Satan, as it is written in Revelations 12 and 9, which means a wedding ring symbolizes a union between an individual and the devil. But now let's talk about wedding dresses. When we search for the origins of wedding dresses, many sources claim Europeans started the tradition. They believe Queen Philippa of England started the trend when she married Prince Eric of Pomerania. But this is not the true origin of the wedding dress. When we dive further into history, we find that wedding dresses actually started among Chinese women in the ancient world. In those times, Chinese men and women had specific dress codes in their society, which led to their brides and grooms wearing black robes with red trim over a white undergarment. However, this soon turned into them wearing wedding dresses to represent good luck due to one of their princesses starting the trend. And due to the idea of luck being a pagan custom invented by the Celtics, the wedding dress has pagan roots as well. Moving forward, there are no priests for marriages in the Bible, and this custom only became a thing due to Romans forcing marriages to be done in Christian churches around 800 AD. This means the tradition of being married in a church under a priest to have your relationship accepted before the Father started 859 years ago. And this is an issue due to multiple people being recognized in biblical history as married well before 859 years ago, which brings me to my next point. If there were no churches for people to get married in, how were unions made in the biblical era? Well, when we look into the Old Testament, we find the answer to this question. Genesis 24 and 67, and it reads, "And Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death." So for context, Isaac is a patriarch of the nation of Israel, son of Abraham and father of Jacob, making him a grandfather to the 12 sons of Israel. And here we see the process Isaac went through to make Rebekah his wife. With that being said, there was no mention of a white dress or altar, and Rebekah never got a ring with diamonds to solidify this relationship. Instead, Isaac brought Rebekah to his tent, and while in the tent, he took her, which is the biblical way of saying they had intercourse. And these actions alone are what made Rebekah his wife.
Okay, here we go.
Huh, fabulous equipment. Best of the best.
I have air conditioning, too.
Air conditioners?
Well, I suppose it is a bit much.
Shit, I'll take one.
But let's visit the Strong's Concordance to prove this is the case. So here we see the word took can be defined with many words, but the only definitions that fit the context are mingle and to take a wife. Furthermore, the word mingle is defined as to come together, and as we know, men and women come together through intercourse. So in simple words, when Genesis 24 and 67 said Isaac took Rebekah, it was in reference to them having intercourse. Also, due to there being no action between the intercourse and the claiming of Rebekah, there is nothing else we can say solidified their union. And when we add all of this information together, the Bible is telling us intercourse between two individuals is what solidifies a marriage in the eyes of the Father. But why is this important? Well, due to Western civilization being ignorant, most people believe the ring is what solidifies a marriage, and this takes away from the importance of women maintaining their virginity until they can give themselves to the right man, which is what was done throughout history. This has led to women completely disregarding their body counts and leaving men with the option of being alone or finding the nearest woman, wringing her past out of her like a wet rag and settling for used goods.
He's out of line, but he's right.
Now, some women might be offended by this, but it's because they don't realize they should respect themselves enough to view their private area as something more valuable than a piece of metal on a finger. If all women were raised with this understanding, there would be less bust downs and thoughts, and they'd be replaced with more modest women who view themselves as the ultimate gift they can give a man. Also, I want to make it clear that I am not coming for the women in the Israelite faith. I understand our sisters made mistakes before the faith just like our brothers, but we know 2 Corinthians 5:17 tells us those who follow the Messiah, Yahawashah, are new creatures, which means we are not held accountable for our sins before the faith as long as we maintain our faith. This means a body count doesn't exist between the father and his daughters, and they belong to the man they gave themselves to after waking up to the truth. However, these women are expected to teach the next generation the correct way of a woman, as it is written in Titus 2:4-5, which will keep them from making the mistakes their mothers made before the faith. As for those who aren't in a faith, you are held to a body count, and every time you sleep around, you are further polluting a body meant for one man.
Okay, so before me and John come in, most of you said body count shouldn't matter, doesn't matter, whatever. So if body count doesn't matter, if it shouldn't matter, what is your body count? Natasha, we'll start with you.
Wait, you just asked my body count?
Yeah.
I would rather not say.
You've shared it before.
Yeah, but I realize I don't really want to say it again.
Natasha, you're killing me. All right, Cynthia?
I would prefer not to say.
I also prefer not to say. Just out of respect for my family.
For the family. Who's the gangster who's going to actually come in and share? Go ahead.
Yeah, I would rather not say.
Obviously, I'm not going to say.
Okay. One girl starts off a domino effect. Go ahead.
Good.
I won't say. I'm sorry.
I prefer not to say.
Okay, so you refuse to share, yet you think body count doesn't matter. Thus.
Because if I say, I'm going to be judged.
Thus, some.
Any,
hold on.
No
stop.
Matter what number.
Stop interrupting. Somewhere.
Martin, super chatted 50.
Martin, stop interrupting.
Ladies,
sorry.
This is hurting my brain. Studies have empirically shown that women with higher body counts are far more likely to divorce. The same is not true for men. It's biology. You release oxytocin during
relations, that's the pair bonding hormone. So, some deep down, even though you guys say body count doesn't matter, your refusal to share it would indicate to me that it matters. You know it matters, and that's why you refuse to share it.
Also, even though men can't technically cheat, men are still held accountable for sleeping around without the intent to marry, which is fornication. And this makes sleeping around with people dangerous, due to 1 Corinthians 6:9-11 telling us fornicators will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. But now that we know intercourse is marriage, let's talk about the biblical roles of men and women while married.
Fuck that country, man. I am not shedding 1 ounce of blood for that motherfucker. Why? Why would I shed any more blood for that bitch? My ancestors already paid the debt. We don't owe America a goddamn thing. That's the fucked up part. Y'all think we owe that motherfucker something. America fucking owes us, and it won't fucking pay up. So fuck people who don't pay their debt. May that motherfucker burn slow and rot. And look what it's doing. Burning slow and rot. So, yeah, miss me with all that. We're Americans thing. We're only Americans when we good at sports, when we popular. You understand? When we go and fight and risk our lives for that motherfucker. That's when we Americans. Fuck that. Keep all that shit. I don't want none of it.
Gaza is rich. Gas rich. At least 1.4 trillion cubic feet rich, to be precise. But there's a catch.
Geologists and natural resources economists have confirmed that the occupied Palestinian territory lies above sizable reservoirs of oil and natural gas wealth in Area C of the occupied West Bank and the Mediterranean coast off the Gaza Strip. To date, the real and opportunity costs of the occupation exclusively in the area of oil and natural gas have accumulated to tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars.
Back in 1999, the Palestinian authorities signed a deal with British Gas. Just off the Gaza coast, they struck it lucky, and two wells were drilled. That's Gaza Marine 1 and 2. It was a multi-billion dollar gift from God, an economic boon both home and abroad.
This is one of the key messages here today. There will be gas available for export. And from my conversations with Palestinian officials, including President Arafat, it is clear that they have no interest in just sitting on a gas surplus.
fam. Israel know this. That's why Israel doing what it doing, trying to get all them people out there so they can go and steal all that natural oil and resources. And I don't understand. And they continue doing all this stuff to people. And you got other people out there in Africa and ain't doing nothing. Because the whole continent is Africa. Don't let them fool you talking about the Middle East. All that whole continent is Africa, y'all. And all them people out there, all them little scaredy cat out there letting all these innocent people die. But this must be the Most High will, though. That's why, you know, y'all, I want y'all people, the common man and the common woman all over the world to check this out, right? You got your little governments, you got your little police officers and all them things in y'all little nations and stuff, the army and stuff like that. You see how much they oppress the people and then they don't have no stop sign. But you see all these stop signs now when it comes to the whole world event. When it's up to the whole world to stop doing what they're doing and focus on this event and help these people be where they help these people stop being destroyed. See, black men and black women know what genocide is. Black men and black women know how genocide feel. Black women and black men know how genocide tastes. And the taste is not good. It's not sweet. It's not bitter. It's not sour. It's not tainted. It's just not good. This is what I said, the world out here and out here in this world right here. This is what I say. Y'all don't understand. See, these people up here call themselves is not for real, right? The is not for real world saying that they the true children of God. They are sitting up here killing people, destroying people. For what? And we got all these people out here governing in their countries and stuff too scared to man up. They got to go to a court to get permission. I got to get permission to sit down a non-pigmentation man. And the non-pigmentation man say, screw y'all. Y'all ain't running this. I'm going to do what I want to do. Just telling y'all, man. You can sit back in here and lock up the common man, common woman, or try to put your whole mindset and narratives on what it is.
Fast forward to 2007. Hamas comes to power and Israel launches an offensive on the Gaza Strip, leaving behind 1,400 dead Palestinians, but taking with it the gas fields. Now, within the year, Israel announced the discovery of the Leviathan natural gas field, which did include Gaza's riches, all in all valued at $453 billion. Now, since then, Gazans haven't seen a shekel, or to be more accurate, they have been denied around $47 billion in revenue. As for Tel Aviv, well, it's gunning to become a new hub.
This is a historical moment in which the small country of Israel becomes a significant player in the global energy market. The Memorandum of Understanding will enable Israel, for the first time, to export Israeli natural gas to Europe. And it is even more impressive looking at the significant set of agreements we signed over the last year, which position...
See, I I want y'all to catch this right. Now, this is the first time that Israel can send their gas line to Europe. Who is Europe? European nation, European, Caucasian man. So that's why Britain is trying to help them out so they can get some of that and all this. This is all about sending natural oil, oil and resources to the European nation. Because you know Europe doesn't have good minerals over there. That's why they come over here and that's why they come to other people's land and still trying to steal their resources. So, you know, keep in mind, you know, they don't say, you know, only thing they keep saying is the European nation. Why is everything about the European nation? What happened to all the other people other than the European nation? Is there other people other than the European nation? You know what I'm saying? All through my podcast, they always talking about the European nation, European nation, European nation, European nation. Now, who is these European nations they talking about? And why are these European nations the only nation that is talked about? And they giving resources, or they doing the crime?
Israel and the Israeli energy and water sectors as a key global player.
Let's just run through this then. At that moment in time, so we're talking 2022, Russian oil and gas were sanctioned. Iranian oil was sanctioned. Syrian oil fields were, and still are, illegally occupied by US forces. Now, the key port of Latakia was being bombed by Israel, and the port of Beirut, the gateway to the Middle East, lay in ruins. Enter this small country of Israel right here with its seas of gas, its working ports, an answer to Europe's problems, and perhaps most critically, the US blessing. Because in case you didn't know, US Congress has decided that Israeli energy is in the highest national security interests of Washington. So DC was only too happy for Tel Aviv to become a key global player. After all, it had itself previously mulled over ways in which to make its 51st state a window onto Europe.
Another interesting application of nuclear excavation would be a sea level canal 160 miles long across Israel, connecting the Mediterranean with the Gulf of Aqaba, and thus the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean. Such a canal would be a strategically valuable alternate to the present Suez Canal.
The Suez Canal is a gold mine. It connects the Mediterranean Sea to the Indian Ocean via the Red Sea. It is the link between Asia and Europe. Every day, almost 3 million barrels of oil, 8% of global LNG, 50 ships, $9 billion worth of cargo, 12% of global trade all pass along this right here single canal. Remember in 2021 how a container ship ran aground in the Suez? Global trade was brought to its knees. The alternative route via the Cape of Good Hope adds around...
See, fam, you don't see that they see a big money thing now. They got easy access to send the oil to you and the resources that they got. So if they push Gaza all the way back to where they at the end of the line close to Egypt and have them there like a trap dog in a driveway, a brick driveway, and all he got is a wall behind them. That's how they got them. All they got a wall at the end and they can't go through, and then they just pushing them people right there at the border. Right there, and taking all their land, right, and over this right here. But I'm going to tell you something, y'all. I'm going to tell the black man and the black woman something. You know that's our land over there, right? You know, all that is our land over there. But check this out. This is our resources that they taking or whatever. This is the money that they taking out of our nation, because this is our stuff. The joke's on us, because we sitting up here, don't want to re-up and say that we're the children of God that we truly are, and that's our land over there, and go fight for the land over there. And you see the resources and the money right there over there to sit up there and bring our nation to a big thing. But we were always molested in the mindset of colonialism, white supremacy, and KKK. KKK is fear. Colonialism is teaching you how to become a Caucasian. And white supremacy is everything they see, you see on TV and books and everything is all about white, Caucasian, non-pigmentation people. And that's the mindset that we are in. That's the mindset that we need to come from and out of this. See, if the mindset was good and our mindset was good in a conscious level, and we were and our conscience was higher, because we set our conscience so low, for instance, if we had a high vibration of consciousness in our nation, we had all these football players and basketball players making all that money, they could have went back and had made ways for some of our nation to go back to Africa and make some noise and build up our nation. But the vibration went so down because we molested our minds were so molested with, the low vibration. The low vibration of the non-pigmentation man and the non-pigmentation woman. Now, I ask you, what advantage does non-pigmentation skin have? What advantage does a non-pigmentation person who have non-pigmentation on their skin, what advantage is that? Or what disadvantage of that? Because they said melanin and skin is a high vibration. If melanin and skin is a high vibration and non-melanin in your skin is a low vibration, then we're cheating ourselves out of vibrations. We slumbered like the Palestinians right there at the wall, barking like a mad dog trying to get out from being trapped.
...9 days and 7,000 kilometers to the journey. There is no replacement for the Suez Canal, except perhaps for the Ben-Gurion Canal. Now, what the US had been thinking about back in the 60s was dropping 520 nukes on parts of Israel, all to build a 260-kilometer-long canal that would start at the Red Sea down there in the port city of Eilat, run through the Negev Desert, and pour out into the Mediterranean. Where exactly? Right next to northern Gaza, the same northern Gaza that is currently being bombarded and depopulated. Egypt and its money-making Suez Canal would just be sidelined. The same Egypt that, rumor has it, is now considering taking in refugees in exchange for debt relief by the US. And if you think it's crude of me to talk business during times of an existential war, think again.
Now, you see what type of mindset Egypt is. I haven't talked about Egypt and how their government, those are not the true Egyptians that originally started. Let that be plain anyway. These Egyptians got to go anyway. These Egyptians got to go anyway. The Most High had a problem with the Egyptians. The Most High destroyed the Egyptians. So if the Most High destroyed the Egyptians, that lets you know that the Egyptians are not good people. I don't understand that. And you seeing how they got America in the 60s already planning and plotting how they gonna do this and how you got that. But you got to realize who running America. The is not for real nation. The is not for real nation is running America and pushing pen and pushing policy. APAC. Check out my podcast, y'all. World Event, Black News. You hear about APAC and how APAC influenced the world churning. APAC got 90% of the wheel in their hand, y'all. They got 90% of the steering wheel in their hand, and the rest of it is out for the grab. And you seeing what they doing. That's why I look at all these other nations like doo-doo face. I don't understand these other nations allow, you know, you need help, you be asking for help, and this and that, and y'all slumbering in y'all mess. Y'all shaking in your boots. Y'all pissing in your pants. Like I say, it's good to oppress your people on your wickedness. But when it comes to becoming righteousness and doing the right thing, everybody don't know how to do it. Iran, pussyfooting around the corner, knowing they the big dogs over there and not protecting the people that needs to be protected. I don't know all the ropes in the game. All I see is what going on and what they're showing me to see. But we all know, unless you're a person who doesn't have a soul, for all the people that does have souls, you know, this is a shame.
The winning companies have committed to unprecedented investment in natural gas exploration over the next 3 years, which would hopefully result in the discovery of new natural gas reservoirs.
In recent weeks, Tel Aviv has handed out 12 new licenses to 6 companies, on top of the plan to tap more of the Gaza marine resources. This area is a strategic gold mine. The Israelis have their largest foreign base down the Red Sea, just off Eritrea. And here, a bit further down, well, Beijing has a naval base in Djibouti, a key piece in its enormous global infrastructure project, the Belt and Road, hated by London, Brussels, and Washington alike. Always ask yourself, qui bono, who benefits? Because war is horror and war is hell. But never forget that war, above all else, is big business.
And she asked the question, fam. She said, who benefits? Who benefits? She said, who benefits? The people dead. The soldiers dead. The land destroyed. People hurt. People misplaced. Who benefits off this situation? Who has the most beneficial purpose when this is over? Is it the people or the oppressor? But you know, hey. And then Israel so cocky that they say they're gonna go to Africa and show Africa how to be civilized. That's an insult to Africa. Because they saying You next. You next after they get through with this. That's what he's saying in code. Because you went out there and did what you had to do. Now he say, after this over, we gonna go show Africa how they supposed to be civilized. And y'all in Africa sitting out there fighting each other on these crafty council with this bull crap while Satan getting ready to do something to y'all. And then you already know Africa ain't nobody gonna get your back. Look how they doing Pakistan. Look at everybody. Y'all need to stop. Y'all please stop. Every nation going up there begging, telling somebody to please stop. But you ain't got the balls enough to go out there and tell this man, the next time you drop bombs on these people, we dropping bombs on you. America would have did it. And America did it. Now, they're going to kill all these people just to plot some stuff for their own benefit. And y'all still let, we can't do nothing. The black man in America, the black woman in America, the Latino man in America, the Latino woman in America, Native Indian man in America, and a Native Indian woman in America. We can't do nothing because we still in captivity. Our nations have been destroyed. They done destroyed us. And y'all talking about genocide. And y'all crying like this on genocide. We ain't even had that. We ain't had none of what y'all putting out energy when they was doing it to us. So we already see the reaction if you're a mindset and people looking at the TV like the TV is presenting the world, this is the world TV we watching. And I'm just calling it from the black side news for the common man and the common woman. But they tripping, man. These people are so much tripping. And these world leaders, and we already know, I'm telling you about that dude in Kenya, y'all. That president in Kenya. Somebody got to overthrow him. He got to go. He got to go. If BB said he's going over there after this to go help Africa learn how to behave in so much word. How is they going to plan their way through? Kenya. That president in Kenya got to go. I'm telling y'all. Y'all sitting up here pussyfooting around playing game, letting this dude putting all this devilish in here. Y'all need to take his seat. Y'all need to take his seat. He gotta go, y'all. He gotta go. I'm letting y'all know now, that dude gotta go. But y'all sitting out here wanna fight each other on this and us and that. All that money, all that. I don't understand what's going on. That's why we say they going up here, Israel, is not for real people. Got their whole hands on the steering wheel in America, and they don't care if they crash and burn to get what they need to get down this and this way. Because in order for the non-pigmentation man to have their hands on some resources, they got to continue keeping their hands and in Africa. So those people that's in Africa is the ones that destroying the land, because they're not the true people in that land. And y'all know that these people are not the true people of that land, but you allow this mess to happen. Y'all know this. Y'all already know why. Oh, these people don't even belong here now. Y'all go ahead, get up. Come on, let's get up. Y'all gotta go. All y'all gotta go. Come on, let's go. Let's go. Come on, let's go. Come on, all y'all, like you sweeping dust around the corner, like that, getting all the dust out. All of them got to go. They gotta go. Until they go, you won't have peace in that land. The peace that you're not going to have peace anyway, because you got some leaders that you need to get rid of. And the Most High going to wing them out for you. The Most High going to show you who is crooked and who ain't. Look at him. Look how he's showing how T.D. Jake is. Look how he's showing how all these celebrities, these black celebrities out here that act like they about it, but they ain't nobody but whores and prostitutes, and somebody got them by the balls. I don't know, man. Time is clicking. The oatmeal's getting thick because the water is already lumping out of it. Who gonna eat some thick oatmeal? Who gonna eat some thick oatmeal that been sitting for 5-15 minutes? An hour, 2 hours, a day. Who gonna eat it? Because this is what they feeding us, y'all. That clumpy, 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 clumpy 5-day-old oatmeal. And we thinking we eating steak, but we really eating oatmeal.
Won't you stand? Won't you stand by me? I just need a little more time. I just need a little more time with you.
This is not 1973. This is 50 years later. We assumed that Russia was weak and incapable and could do nothing but respond to our demands. We got an education. You have a similar phenomenon in the region today of the Middle East. This is not 1973. This is 50 years later. All of these countries are more capable, both in terms of their populations that are better educated and more capable of acting decisively in uniform, but especially Turkey and Iran. These are nations of nearly 90 million people each. The Iranians have some of the best air and missile and space experts in the world. They put together an arsenal of missiles that could dramatically destroy Israel if launched. Then you have the Turks. They can put 2 million men into the field in a month. And they have an excellent army. They also have new missiles in their arsenals that could easily destroy Israel and actually attack our offshore naval power, just as the Iranians do. And the populations in the region are 100% behind them.
But it's real, and it's happening. And it's, in many ways, it's exciting, but in many ways, it's scary. Because we collectively, the world, have for so long grown accustomed to American hegemony. We can talk about how we're opposed to it, you know, and everybody's like, we're against American imperialism. We're against hegemony. We're against the rules-based international order. Of course you are, except you're not, because you are for stability. And while there is a whole bunch of there's a whole bunch of stability that's brought about by this, and people are lulled into a false sense of complacency by the perception of stability. And right now, we're this transformation that's taking place from the American singularity to this global multipolarity, BRICS and all that stuff. It scares people because it means you have to put your faith and your trust in something else. Now, if you're somebody who has been disrupted by the American singularity, yeah, you're ready to jump ship. But if you're somebody whose life has been chugging along in relative comfort, it's a scary proposition, a frightening proposition. So it's not, you know, automatic logic where people say, well, America's failed, so we're going to jump on the Chinese and the Russian ship. Well, for many places in the world, America hasn't failed. We didn't get to be number one because we're a bunch of losers. Okay, we did some things right, and we bullied our way to the top, whatever you want to say, but America is a very powerful nation that has a lot of successes attached to it, and a lot of people around the world found those successes attractive, especially the political and economic elites who make money off the American singularity. And so this idea that we're just going to seamlessly transfer power over to the Russians and the Chinese, that ain't going to happen. This is a very scary time. And it would be scary if this transformation was taking place in a conflict-free environment. But now we start throwing in not only the reality of war, but, what's that biblical statement? Rumors of war. There will be rumors of war. There will be wars and rumors of war. So, we have real war, but we have rumors of war too. Potential of conflict that is generated by the friction that comes from this transformation. It scares the crap out of me. And I think it scares the crap out of just about anybody who's out there because, is the United States willing to go gently into that good night? Dylan from Dylan Thomas here. Are we going to rage against the dying of the light? And my fear is that we're going to rage and we're going to lash out and we're going to create problems. We're going to make as much friction as possible rather than doing the smart thing, which is to smoothly transition and take an important seat at the table of multipolarity. We're going to resist that for as long as possible. And the consequences aren't just going to be economic and political disruption, but it can be chaos and conflict as well. So as much as it makes sense for Russia and China to step into this Palestinian, crisis and be the leaders to get us out, it's just not that easy. America's not going to give up the role that it's enjoyed for the last, 40, 50 years as the lead influencer in the Middle East region. We're not going to hand that mantle over to Russia and China willingly. So there's a lot of disruptive capacity out there, a lot of mischief for America to cause, going forward.
Yes, indeed. And perhaps we can close the program on this. You wrote a couple of articles in the last couple of weeks. One of them, as for energy intelligence, you wrote about, is the U.S. still an essential nation? And you also wrote for RT recently an article about the U.S. military's multi-trillion-dollar fraud. And there were a lot of interlocking, very interconnected points about everything that you just stated. And so I wanted to ask you to close here, with regard to these developments. You are also trying to build a campaign, waging peace. You're trying to develop a film. I'll pull all of this stuff up as you're talking. Given that the United States is spending so much on its military and all of its maneuvers and its leadership are committed to these maneuvers, point to a pretty disastrous conflict that you say with Russia, China, and you also have this unresolved and with what's gone on with Israel's onslaught in Gaza, obviously still a very relevant point, the Middle East or West Asia, that is still very much a possibility of potential hot conflict. Given all of this, I mean, one, how do you feel like your film Waging Peace will contribute to, helping the United States become a more rational actor on the world stage? And two, where do you see this going, do you see, because on the one hand, we have the United States' belligerence is so clear for all of us. But on the other hand, there are some pretty stark barriers. A lot of money being spent, not a lot of wars being won. And that could very well lead to massive changes in its own right. So I'll kick it to you while I pull up your materials.
Well, I'm old school American, I guess I will say, is that I have faith in the system. I know if I glance over to the comments, I'm probably going to be eviscerated for saying that. How could you have faith in the system? How could you? Look, if I don't have faith in the system, if I don't believe in the potential of this country, then what the hell do I believe in? I mean, America doesn't exist. It's not, it's not a viable entity. And I'm not willing to go down that route. So I hold out hope that the American people will be able to be awakened by all that's happening around him. I wrote this article in RT, and one of the things I talk in there is about the fact that the United States has grown so accustomed to throwing money at the Department of Defense because we just assumed that if we funded it, then America will be able to win every war in the world. And what the American people are finding out is that not only could we not defeat the Taliban, not only could we not defeat Al-Qaeda, we can't beat Russia, China. We can't beat anybody. We can't beat Iran. We don't have the ability to do this. And yet we're spending all this money. And so I think there's a growing sense of betrayal. And the idea of, America being the essential nation, we can't be the essential nation when we don't allow ourselves to be essential. I mean, essential means useful. America is essential because you can't solve a problem without America there. But when America becomes the problem, we're not essential. We're the opposite of essential. We're disposable. And that's the world is finding out, especially because America's been operating with this our way or the highway concept. We sanction you if you don't agree with us. We go to war with you, but we can't go to war with you anymore because we can't win any wars because we don't have a military capable of winning wars. Sanctions don't work. But it's real and it's happening.
Vladimir Putin has vowed to beef up Russia's military capabilities. His pledge came today on the Defender of the Fatherland national holiday.
В современном мире немало тревожных вызовов и рисков.
There are many alarming challenges and risks in the modern world, but the powerful capabilities and combat readiness of our army and navy guarantee Russia's security and its free sovereign development. Incorporating our real combat experience, we will continue to strengthen the armed forces in every possible way, including ongoing re-equipping and modernization efforts. Today, the share of modern weapons and equipment in the strategic nuclear forces has already reached 95%, while the naval component of the nuclear triad is at almost 100%. We have begun serial production of new Zircon hypersonic missiles. Trials of other offensive systems are nearing completion. Last December, new strategic submarines were added to the Navy. Just the other day in Kazan, 4 2-160M missile carriers were transferred to the armed forces.
Now, a bit earlier, the president had taken to the skies for an up-close and personal inspection of a modernized strategic bomber. He actually sat behind the controls of the aircraft for the flight, which lasted around 40 minutes. Before climbing on board, he actually personally inspected four of the modernized aircraft. Well, the T-2-160M, it's a Russian strategic bomber. It's also known as the White Swan. NATO calls it Blackjack. It's part of the country's nuclear triad. It's got a range of more than 12,000 kilometers. It's ammo. Well, it's a big variety of ammo, weapons, missiles, guided munitions, nuclear-capable weapons, and even sea mines as well. It can also carry what are called fab bombs. They've, by the way, shown their effectiveness during the conflict ongoing in Ukraine. The FAB, F-A-B, it's a high explosive aerial bomb. Its development actually started in the Soviet Union. Now, these days, they're modernized with wing kits and GPS, allowing precise targeting. Also, the ability to deploy them pretty far away from the front lines. Now, these were, as I understand, used in high volume during the strikes on Avdiivka. Meanwhile, the Russian president gave his review of the aircraft that carried them.
We are receiving advanced military hardware, and it's excellent. It's really of the next generation. As I told the aircraft commander and the heads of the defense ministry.
All of Africa stands with Russia now. All of Africa. Russia and China. You know what's in Africa? resources and money. Money to be made. Because Africa and India, specifically India, are going to be the global superpowers of the future. Not America, and definitely not Europe. And by the way, Africa still suffers underneath the amount of money that it's paying Europe every year because of colonialism. Colonialism. 1600s, 1700s, colonialism. Now that they're standing up on their own, guess what? They want their own money, their own people. They were thriving before colonialism. Now they are making their own money and they're like, oh, we want to keep this. What are these people doing in our country? They're European. This is Africa. Bye. We have a huge problem with this. Oh, Russia and China also have a problem with this? Come on in. And then I saw this video. The government is keeping us distracted because they don't want us to know that Africa and India are partnering with China and Russia. Yeah, all of Africa doesn't want us. You know what they want? They don't even want to conquer, which they could. They don't want to conquer economics. They don't want to conquer the economy of the world. They want a fair share. You know who doesn't want that? Europe and America. They don't want that. They don't want fair shares all the way across. America wants to be on top. Europe wants to be on top. But what do you think about this?
But let me tell you, speaking for millions of Jewish people around the world right now, I think it's really offensive that progressives have totally, totally forgotten history and what the misery of being Jewish has been for generations and generations and generations for reasons that I do not really understand, but is real. So please,
I can help you understand.
Don't let that progressive love stop in my door. Well, okay.
I'll help you understand. For one, Representative Phillips, it is strikes me as a little ironic that you're going to say to me in my face as a Black American who doesn't have the option of someone that the United Nations and the international community having intervened on my behalf to create an entire country for my people who have zero options of someplace to flee. So it strikes me as much as I empathize. When you tell the story of Jewish ships full of Jewish people after the Holocaust being turned away, I've spoken at length on this podcast about how disgusted I was to discover that Otto Frank and Frank's father application was turned away and how close they came to be able to immigrate to America. I'm disgusted by it. But the question is, why should the actions of an anti-Semitic America and an anti-Semitic Europe be paid for by the people of Palestine who had absolutely nothing to do with the horrors of Holocaust?
Breaking news. It looks like Israel is indeed the broke bitch we always thought she was. I mean, was there really even a question? Look up here, okay? So Israel is $60 billion in debt. I mean, America's trillions of dollars in debt, but to see Israel billions of dollars in debt and they literally just started their country or chalk zone less than 100 years ago, that's crazy to me. Billions of dollars in debt, and they're going to be their debt is steadily raising as the Red Sea is being blocked off by Yemen, and tax has increased to fuel defense spending. The Financial Times has just reported this. What's the matter? You can't afford to genocide? Mad because you can't get your hands on that natural oil and natural gases? And even if you did, those companies said that they're not touching it because they don't want to get in trouble. They don't want sanctions put on them for warmongering and pillaging. Not you being the broke bitch that we always knew your broke ass was. That's what you get. Well, it looks like things are going to get much, much worse. Before we go ahead and flip over, Israel's more than 4-month conflict with Hamas has taken a severe toll on its economy. Now, I did report just a couple days ago that their economy has tanked at exponentially by the day, and it's down by 19.6% or 20%, as the Wall Street Journal has reported. The hit came as the government mobilized a record 300,000 reservists. Tens of thousands of people were displaced in the north and south of the country, and consumer spending slumped, baby. So basically, ain't a damn thing coming in and everything is going out. Yikes, it looks like the house is indeed losing. For those of y'all that, think that the house can't lose, this is proof of the house losing, okay? And baby, it looks like it's about to get a whole lot worse because the Yemeni force just cut those fiber optic lines located underneath the Red Sea that America and Israel were both using. Yikes. Now, these were fiber optic cables. These are extremely expensive, and these are the types of cables that they're actually burying underneath the ground here in America that allows us to get that 5G coverage. You get what I'm saying? At lightning speed, we're able to access whatever we want through our Wi-Fi at the click of a finger, and you no longer have that. Ouch. Now, that has got to hurt, seeing as though Israel is known for cutting off cable and power. It must really suck, you broke-ass bitch, to have that same thing happen to you. How does it feel? Reporting live, Channel 6, Action News. Let us know, because inquiring minds want to know from what the streets are saying. And I'm going to hold your hand when I say this, Izzy girl. You broke. And your lights just got cut. You's a broke bitch. Pay your bill, girl. If you want warmonger and genocide, at the very least, you could pay that damn bill with your broke ass. What's the problem? You don't have no more money? Didn't we just send you $96.5 billion? Let me know what y'all think, because this is kind of crazy, seeing as though they have received billions and billions and billions of dollars, but they're still $60 billion in debt, and they're preparing for the debt to steadily rise exponentially. I mean, that 20% happened within 2 months of the Yemeni forces blocking the sea. So just imagine what the war going on for the remainder of the year is going to yield. Shall I say 60%? Do I hear a 60% decline? Are we shooting for 80%? I see 80 over there in the white and blue. God damn it, I'm going for 100% decline. Because guess what? They're not a real place. It's a chalk zone. So go ahead and get them shekels back. Even, you know what? This is embarrassing because you stole all that money and shit from Palestinians and y'all still $60 billion in debt. You received 4 different payments of billions of dollars from America that y'all stole. And you're still $60 billion in debt. You're actively involved in 8 different genocides and receiving money from that, and you're still in debt. What's wrong, baby? None of your assets are liquid? And y'all, aren't y'all the ones that created credit scores? What's y'all credit score? What's y'all credit score? It's not looking too good, babe. You gonna have to pay them bills. Because the Yemeni force said that y'all lights... Gots to go, baby. Gots to go. Well, y'all be all right. And if you don't like it, just think about how the Palestinians feel right now. Exactly. Yup. It looks like Saudi Arabia has warned Israel that catastrophic consequences would happen if Israel did indeed decide to invade into Rafah. For those of you who don't know, there's approximately 1.5 million refugees that have fled both the north and central and south Gaza from the actual genocide going on in Palestine, and they're actively at the Rafah border crossing where Rafah and Falastin meets Egypt, okay? So they're all pushed into this buffer zone, and they're in Rafah right now, and they're trying to escape the genocide that's going on inside of Palestine and Gaza. And just so you guys know, they're actively occupying the West Bank as we speak, as well as the Israeli settlers that are not even from Israel. They're from different countries. Now, Israel has been threatening every single day while simultaneously, shooting missiles at the tents in Rafah. So there's been some credibility to their threats, okay? Saudi Arabia, not so much, because you have not pulled up to nothing, and you've done nothing but talk the whole time. And it turns out Israel called you on your bluff, because as of right now, bitch, you guessed it. Yep, they are in Rafah, bombing Rafah. So, Sadia, what you gonna do, girl? What you gonna do, girly pop? Gumdrop, we know you ain't nothing but talk. You have done nothing this entire time, okay? You have said nothing, you've done nothing, and the only time you actually speak up is when someone calls you out for not fucking speaking up. So, we're gonna need you to have several seats, because you're not helping things. Bye. And while Saudi Arabia is promising the world and delivering absolutely nothing, the Israeli army is doing shit like this. Taking food off the trucks at the Rafah border, putting it on those bulldozers and putting it on their army tanks, and making TikTok videos with them about them destroying the food on the trucks. 1.5 million innocent civilians are starving to death. I watched a baby take its last breath and y'all doing shit like this. There's severe famine going on in northern, central, and southern Gaza, and nothing is being done to stop Israel from doing this. Absolutely nothing is being done except the Jordanian princess herself hand delivering and airdropping food from the sky into southern and central Gaza. She even tried to drop some in the north, but unfortunately it landed somewhere pretty far, I think in the ocean, or was it central Gaza? But right now, it's a dire situation. There's severe famine going on right now, and they're literally destroying their food as we speak. And none of the nations are speaking up or doing a damn thing about it except for Yemen and Lebanon. And the occasional Iran. And Putin. But they're not like actually going in and doing anything. And right now we are just sick and tired of watching Israel consistently get away with this bullshit. Because that's exactly what it is. It's bullshit. So like, what's your deal? Like, what's y'all problem? Why is it that people of color from several different countries care about y'all cousins more than y'all care about them? Arab countries? When are y'all gonna actually stand up and do something? Very much something. Other than just say something. Don't look like it's going to be anytime soon. I just want to update y'all and let y'all know this is what's currently going on at the border of Rafah. And Israel is evil. Yet again, they're evil. So, I can't wait till they stomp your ass out, BB.
Director of the CIA, dual citizenship with Israel. Jew, who's in charge of the most powerful positions of our nation. Janet Yellen, Secretary of the Treasury. Dual citizenship with Israel. Jew. Merrick Garland, Attorney General, dual citizenship with Israel. Jew. Alejandro Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security for our country, dual citizenship with Israel. Jew. Abel Haynes, Director of National Intelligence, dual citizenship with Israel. Jew. Hey, brother. Hope you have a blessed day. Keep on fighting, brother. Jeff Zients, White House Chief of Staff, dual citizenship with Israel. Jew. Four-star Admiral Rachel Levine, U.S. Assistant Secretary of Health. U.S. Assistant Secretary of Health. Transgender can't figure out their gender, but they're the Secretary of Health for our country and a four-star Admiral. Jew. Antony Blinken, Secretary of the State, dual citizenship with Israel. Jew. Wendy Sherman, Deputy Secretary of the State, dual citizenship with Israel. Jew. Victoria Nolan, Secretary for Political Affairs, dual citizenship with Israel. Jew. David S. Cohen, Deputy Director of the CIA, dual citizenship with Israel. Jew. Lieutenant Colonel Jennifer Pritzker, transgender. Jew. Now we'll talk about who's behind abortion. Mr. Ballou helped father the abortion pill, known for father of the abortion pill, worldwide for his work on RU486 mifepristone. Jew. Alan Guttmacher, president of Planned Parenthood, vice president of the American Eugenics Society. Jew. Vanya Mindell started Planned Parenthood with Margaret Sanger and her sister. Jew. Founding father of abortion movement, one of the founders of the pro-abortion group NARA, Lawrence Lader. Jew. Henry Morton Gollard, father of abortion in Canada, first doctor in North America to use vacuum aspiration, which means using a vacuum to suck up the poor baby fetuses from the mother. He's a Jew. Gregory Pincus, father of the birth control pill, worked with Margaret Sanger and Abraham Stone to begin hormonal contraceptive research. Jew. Malvin Weisberg operated an abortion clinic in California where 16,431 aborted fetuses were found in his shipping container on his property. Jew. Paul Ehrlich, father of the overpopulation theory, says you're having too many babies, says you gotta start cutting back and having abortions, wrote the population bomb in 1968. Jew. Now we'll go through and talk about who's taking the guns away. Who's taking your right to bear arms away? Senator Herbert Cole passed the Gun Free Schools Act of 1990, the Gun Free Schools Act of 1995, the Child Safety Locked Act of 1999. Herbert Cole's a Jew. Senator Barbara Boxer, American Handgun Standards Act of 1999, the Firearm Licensing and Record of Sale Act of 2000 and 2001. She's a Jew. Congressman Emanuel Seller, Gun Control Act of 1968, Jew. Senator Howard Metzenbaugh, the Every Violation of Gun Control Act of 1968, helped pass the plastic guns ban, helped pass the specific semi-auto rifles ban, helped pass the Brady Bill and the Brady Bill 2, which means you gotta wait for a certain amount of time before you have your right to bear arms. He's a Jew. Senator Dianne Feinstein, Every Violation of Gun Control Act of 1968, the Large Capacity Ammunition Magazine Import Ban, the Firearm Licensing and Record of Sale Act of 2000 and 2001. She's a Jew. Congressman Senator Chuck Schumer helped pass the Brady and Gun Protection Act, the Brady Bill 2, the Assault Weapons Provision, the Firearm Licensing and Record of Sale Act of 2000 and of 2001. Chuck Schumer is a Jew. Senator Frank Lautenberg, he helped pass the Gun Free Schools Act of 1995, the Lautenberg Domestic Confiscation Provision, the Stop Gun Trafficking Act of 1999, the Gun Show Accountability Act of 1999, the Gun Industry Accountability Act of 1999. He's a Jew. Congressman Gerald Nadler, Protecting Our Kids Act. He's a Jew. Now we'll talk about who's behind COVID. Who's behind COVID? We'll talk about who's trying to get people to take the experimental jabs. CDC Director, Director of the Center for Disease Control, Rochelle Walensky, Jew. CDC Deputy Director, Ann Schwalchit, Jew. CDC Chief of Staff, Sherry Berger, Jew. CDC Chief Medical Officer, Mitchell Wolf, Jew. CDC Director in the Washington office, Jeff Rezik, Jew. COVID Czar Jeff Sates, Jew. COVID Senior Advisor Andy Slavitt, Jew. Assistant Health Secretary for our country, but they can't even figure out their own gender because they're transgender, but they're in charge of health of our country, Rachel Levine, Jew. Head of Pfizer, Albert Bourla, Jew. Pfizer Chief Scientist, Michael Dostin, Jew. Moderna Chief Scientist, Tal Zaks, Jew. BlackRock CEO, Larry Fink, Jew. BlackRock President, Rob Capital, Jew. Chief Medical Officer of Johnson & Johnson, Jew. Chief Medical Officer of Merck, Michael Rosenbaum, Jew. Executive Chairman, World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab. You either love him or you hate him. The head advisor, working right there, best friends with the guy that says you'll own nothing one day and you'll love it, Mr. Yuval Harari, Jew. Now we'll go through and we'll talk about the Federal Reserve. Who's been operating the chair and vice chair of our Federal Reserve? William Hardy, second chair of the Federal Reserve, Jew. Paul Warburg, second vice chair of the Federal Reserve, Jew. Eugene Meyer, 5th Chair of the Federal Reserve. Jew. Eugene Robert Black, 6th Chair of the Federal Reserve. Jew. Arthur Burns, 10th Chair of our Federal Reserve. Jew. Paul Volcker, 12th Chair of the Federal Reserve. Jew. Alan Greenspan, 13th Chair of the Federal Reserve. Jew. Ben Bernanke, 14th Chair of the Federal Reserve. Jew. Alan Blinder, 15th Vice Chair of our Federal Reserve. Jew. Janet Yellen, 15th Chair of the Federal Reserve. Jew. Alice Mitchell Rivlin, 16th Vice Chair of the Federal Reserve. Jew. Donald Cohen, 18th Vice Chair of the Federal Reserve. Jew. Stanley Fester, 20th Vice Chair of the Federal Reserve. Jew.
What's up, brother?
Gee.
Well, you can find somewhere else. This is public space. I gotta expose the corrupt government. I tried to warn you before I started.
It's the Jew guy.
Dude, have a blessed
day. I love you.
I love you too, brother. Now let's talk about 9/11. Who's behind 9/11? Well, have you heard of Lucky Larry? Larry Silverstein, a Jew, purchased the Twin Towers a few months before the terrorist attack. Happened to put an insurance policy for a few $100 million. What did he collect a couple months later? $4.5 billion.
Now, you heard me, fam, say this. That is not for real. Have 90% of the steering wheel in America. You heard me say that. Now, he's throwing out this information for y'all to see and telling y'all. So, in fact, if they doing this, and in fact, if this real, you know that they are pushing all the money into Israel, giving all the clock to Israel. So how is Israel conquering two nations? You got the nation over there in Africa, and then they got the nation over here in America. The earth is given to the hands of the wicked, right? Now we pinging out who is the wicked and what the wicked is, and you seeing what the wicked is doing. The COVID, the trade center, the this, the that, the how come. Now, we seeing who has the steering wheel and who's driving the steering wheel the way into destruction of common man and common women all over the world.
The 12 tribes rise.